in all its voices and all its tones. It is a beautiful sound. We have a choice. And what we are going to do now is show you how we can give direction to that choice. The tones, the underlying tones of what the human race is about will come into the picture with Dawn Breath. After Dawn, we will immediately continue the program in a natural flow with Peter Marion, who will then show us what kind of leadership we can show and work with that can really help us make this shift of the bend. And it would be great. Peter's book is out there. It's called Evolutionary Leadership. If you could read it. Because that will give us a personal direction of what also personal leadership means. And it is about all of us and all of you. And don't the floor is yours.
This is the woman who's made it all possible. And of course, I'm so delighted to come to Washington, D.C., where I get to see them. Thank you, Professor Laszlo. There are many of us who have been reading your books for years. Your book, Evolution, inspired me so many years ago, and we want to thank you again for all. And you're about to hear from Peter Murray, who's done an extraordinary piece of work in the Netherlands, married a wonderful Dutch lady who's here, and his parents are here, and I think we ought to thank Peter for the contribution that he's made to your society. You know what a tall poppy is? Yeah? If you go to Australia, you know, they tell you about tall poppies. And if you happen to be one, you raise your head above and you want to get cut down. Oh. So, in a sense, what I'm saying, and the reason why you have a text that is speaking to you about the future of the Netherlands. I've been coming here for 12 years, and I keep hearing the Dutch say, Don, we can't be that good. I know what you say is probably true, and don't expect us to do it. After all, we are Dutch. I can't tell you how often I've heard that. I'm tired of hearing it. Okay? Now, I need to teach you something to say as a whole group, and I'll tell you when to say it. And what you say is, come to the Netherlands and see for yourself. Can you say it? Come on.
Netherlands and see for yourself.
If you want to find out how a very complex system can manage its environment in a very sophisticated way, if you want to find some of the most spiritual people, even beyond that of Boulder and San Francisco. All right. You got the idea. Okay. Now, what I like so much in here is, so tall poppies in the land of tulips, the models, the maps, and the meshworks for our global society. Our task in a very short amount of time is try to explain how to do it. And the first way how to do it, you stand up and you announce your national anthem.
그러면 했지.
There may have been a time when you said, oh, I will sing that again. I mean, that's archaic and that's backward. But I've known it three times in the last people to sing it when I've done this trip. Great gusto, great enthusiasm. It's like something new is happening there. And let me say to you now how important that is. And we'll talk about it later. Well, I happen to have seen in your paper last Sunday this story about one of your explorers who went down to New Zealand. And my understanding of that trip was that he didn't have a GPS positioning device. I wonder how he got there. I wonder why he went. I wonder why so many people got in the boat with him. And I wonder if Dutch could do that today. Of course, in 1652, they came to Cape Town. I'm very much aware of that. But today we're calling forward not the same kind of exploration in a boat, places of the world where you've never been. We're calling first of all the exploration within your own system, your own heart and soul. Who are you? Why are you? Do you have any responsibility to any person but yourself or your family? I mean, why are we on this earth? In the past, we had wonderful theological explanations of some of the greatest writers in the history of theology here in the Netherlands and the whole rich Calvinistic tradition. But are you Dutch? Are you European? Are you global citizens? Are you fans of the orange and soccer? What are the priorities that we've got? And why do we have them? And how? Why do they change? And what are you teaching your children in terms of who they are? And what is it that they need to hear from you about what's ahead for them? And how can we begin to address these very sensitive issues in the whole field of education? Realizing that we've got a wounded world. Here we were first on the peak of affluence. No one worried about where to find food today or absence from predators outside. You could have made many, many choices. You didn't have to come here. Oh, we're such a privileged society. And what are we making of that? Do we simply want to consume more like my friendly Americans do? Is that it? Do we seriously want to approach our split earth with so many gaps? Of course, I understand the Dutch have made a much more major contribution per capita over the years in places like Africa than any other group. You have reason to be proud. But now I'm asking you, what if maybe our approaches have not got to the real issues? You recall I made 63 trips to South Africa from 1981 to last year, deeply embedded in the whole transformation of apartheid. I learned some very important lessons, unfortunately. And what I learned was that our solutions, even though elegant and surprising that they didn't have a civil war there, I also learned that getting rid of what we don't want is not the same thing as getting what we do want. And today, still the have-not gaps in South Africa, as my friend Desmond Tutu will tell you and even cry about, but now the haves are blacks, and the have-nots are blacks. And so, in spite of the hurtling efforts of Mandela and many others, the gaps are getting wider. What's wrong with this picture? Well, because we thought the issues were about race. And I want to tell you that they were never about race. just like we think the issues in the Middle East are about religion. They're not about religion. And in spite of sending $250 billion since 1960 to Nigeria alone, an oil-rich society, the gaps continue to exist in the wild. May I suggest then gently that our approaches to these problems and to their solution are too narrow, too superficial, because they do not deal with the deepest codes that generate behavior. Now, many of you know that I'm an ardent fan supporter, as my mentor, the late Claire W. Graves, who taught at Union College in Schenectady for a number of years. In 1974, he wrote an article in The Futurist, the publication of the World Future Society, the title, Human Nature Prepares for a Momentous Leap. 1974. Because he had already sensed in his elegant research a major shift that was going to happen. And he said very plainly that the kind of symptoms that we see today are not signs of decay. They are signs of progress, which means humans are setting up the conditions for the kind of shift that you spoke so well of today. That was 1974. And as many of you know, these colors along here are not rainbow colors. Their value system, mimetic colors, starting from beige to purple to red to blue to orange to green to yellow to turquoise. And these happen to be the same colors that you find within this. These aren't chakra colors. They're value system colors. That's how we're talking about. Very complex value system codes. And this was the first man who began to identify these evolutionary codes in great specificity and clarity, described how human nature pulsates, ratchets through these complex adaptive intelligences as life conditions set the scene for the need for the next. Not a Calvinistic script predetermined, not crop circles in the human psyche, but complex adaptive intelligences that emerge out of life conditions. That's why it is not a deterministic model. It's a framework that simply explains how humans, over time, have been able to construct complex adaptive intelligences. And how, at a certain stage, there is the possibility for regeneration. When we did not go on that slippery slope to Jared Diamond's new book, Collapse. But thus far, human nature has had the capacity to reinvent itself. How do I know that? Well, we are still here. In spite of lions and tigers and bears, oh Lord, save us from these. So what we're looking at here are not the typical surface-level attitudes, values that you often read about. We're looking at something much more profound, complex, adaptive, contextual intelligences that arise in people, in companies, in societies, in response to life conditions. So it's the life conditions that determine these patterns. And no doubt many of you have been exposed to some of this particular framework in terms of looking at verticality, as Ken Wilber calls it, of how these systems have emerged. And because of our inability historically to get down into these systems means that we do so many things inappropriately. Even invade Iraq without understanding the deep cultural codes at the core of that artificial society with boundaries set by some British clerk in 1920, entrapping hardcore systems And when we try to impose a first world free market multi-party democracy on these particular what we call mimetic contours, well, you see what happens. But it's very difficult for many in egalitarian societies like you have become to see verticality. And often the response is, well, it's a hierarchy and they are bad. I was in Boston at MIT, confronted by a woman who said, are you that taxi with the hierarchy? Oh, I knew I was in serious trouble. And she persisted and said, we don't like people like you because that's racism. So, oh, not again. So I said, ma'am, is your thinking more complex and more sophisticated than that of George W. Bush? She said, it tricked me. Because if she said, yes, there's a hierarchy, and she's on the top. If she said no, then I'd spread the room in her faculty lounge that she's now a Bushy. Which would be a kiss of death in my teeth. So what we're looking at here are not kinds of people or better people. We're looking at adaptive intelligences to life conditions. A friend Ken Wilber calls it the holarchy, which is fine. And since these are types of systems in us, that in cultures, then we had the good sense for the first time to really address these. And then to recognize that all we are really talking about here is what's important to people. I've heard many of you, but I ask everybody, what was it like in World War II for your parents and grandparents? I read and saw the diary of a certain great citizen called Anne Frank. I saw the movie A Bridge Too Far. And no doubt you've heard your parents and grandparents talk about difficult journeys. They had to regress to a coping system to stay alive. And today, because of our affluence, we're finding ourselves confronting interesting new problems around spirituality, upon the life of the inner person, and all those wonderful kinds of thoughts and aspirations that appear in us, not because of our failure in our society, but because of our successes. So if you could begin to imagine the kind of planet that we have, and which all these different systems alive and well spread around the planet, then we have a sense of what the real global issues are. I've spoken at a number of State of the World forums and the Gorbachev Foundation and the Commission on Globalization out of The Hague. I've heard all these speakers for years and years and years. I haven't heard a single person who gets it. Unable to begin to sense verticality and understand what a culture is and what the codes of those cultures happen to be and why so many of our superficial solutions out of our complex systems don't work. Because we don't have the decency in the first place to ask people, and we continue to impose solutions that's not within their capacities. So this is from the book Crucible, Forging South Africa's Future, as we began to show rather primitive maps of what we were seeing. So South Africa, the heavy purple tribal, egocentric empire, predatory systems. That's why the crime rate is high. That's why the HIV infection rate is high. It's about purple under the power of the purple mimetic or tribal. Because they need kids to get the wood and the water, so they breed large families, and the males are driven by the predatory and pregnant as many women as they can just to keep score, with the belief if they get the infection, if they have sex with a virgin, it will cure it. You've heard that. And so the UN had its famous summit on HIV and dirt, and all my South African people went to it. Not a single speaker told the truth. Because heavy egalitarian sensitive green thinking in this case is afraid to say that for fear of being called a racist. in our political career age that lady in the best spot can ever be taken out. Even when Mandela first came out of prison, I had a chance to visit with him. He said, "Doc, what should I do first?" I said, "First, you have to feed the babies. Because of the evil project. Free food in all the schools. But second, you must get on the HIV issue, but Madiba is tribal name. Not allowed to talk about sex. Neither did Tabo and Becky. And I recently talked to people from the Gates Foundation about their medical cocktail, trying to warn them it could very well spread the pandemic. Because of egocentric, live for the moment thinking pattern in so many males. It's such that they think it will give them a quick cure, and so the behavior continues. My point is that our inability to understand culture and how culture forms and how these cultures change and how we can begin to address the verticality of it with bottom-up solutions as opposed to top-down mandates. And my friend, Dr. Jean Houston, probably better than any other person I've ever met, and as you know, she works with the UN on developing societies, has the best understanding of how we employ thinking patterns that are already there, even though mythic, and use those. It's amazing what she's been able to produce. Well, what do we do then? Well, first, I'm a fan of what Mr. Fuller. You can never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. I'm going to challenge you to do that. I mean, I just challenged Eli Lilly, the great pharmaceutical firm, to take responsibility for the immune system of the species on its own. We're just a little pill company. You build that field, they will come. As I say to Benny, my first name is Don, my last name is not Quixote. I don't chase windmills anymore, nor should you. It's time to move on. And no other culture, no other group of people that I know of could do this better than you can, and you're going to. Well, this is really a special event for me because it's a formal, I guess, announcement of the Center for Human Emergence in the Netherlands, which is a group that we started forming 2 years ago out of our frustration. We're not finding the kinds of solutions that we knew existed, but we simply couldn't get them to the field. And so the center is now expanding into multiple nodes, and it begins to offer things one can find, and I truly mean this, nowhere else. First, we're going to build the models of emergence from all of the developmental theories and arrange them and make them available on the internet. Second, working with John Peterson at the Arlen Institute, who's state-of-the-art web crawlers, data miners, software programs, funded by the Singapore government as the early surprise indicator. We're going to do global mapping at deep levels, everything digital, all the websites, all the books, we can read them and extract from them the patterns so we can see early signs of trouble. We're going to display Iraq clearly as to what the pneumatic contours were. And because you have some of the very best GIS technology here, geographic information systems, and because you have so many excellent academics who have spent a lifetime tracking value systems, you are the logical place for this. So the day will come when the leaders of Israel and Palestine will come to The Hague or on floor-to-ceiling video screens. You show them the contours of their cultures. Show where the conflict points are. And then we will build a scaffolding of solutions. Everything that has worked somewhere that few know about. We're going to arrange it in such a way, based again on the spiral, where anyone can access it quickly. Then, because the issue is change, and Claire Graves' theory of conditions for change are so relevant today, what are those conditions for change? How can we understand their sequences? How can we know what to do when? How change cascades across these domains, particularly around us versus them bipolarity, where former friends become enemies, staring at each other across these massive gulfs, gulfs on both sides, abstracting the name of God, in the name of Allah, in the name of General Motors, whatever it happens to be. And finally, how can we communicate through skillful means this massive body of information in user-friendly ways, so people at all levels, local, in schools, in churches, in communities, can use the information. And for 12 years, I've had a dream that this happens at the Hague. And that's why we're here. So, whatever you can do, or dream, you can begin. Boldness has genius and power and magic in it. Arise, tall poppies. Finish each day and be done with it. You've done what you could. Some blunders and absurdities have crept in. Forget them as soon as you can. Tomorrow is a new day. You shall begin it serenely and with too high a spirit to be encumbered with your old nonsense. Now, we tried to model this process right after the assassination occurred. I had the privilege to speak to some of the top leaders in the police, along with their guests, the Hague, the September before, and warned them, as Corinne recalled, because she set it up, warned them they're about to have a major conflict. Oh, not us. We believe in community policing. I said, yes, you, because there's danger on the horizon. And when that event happened and the polarization started to occur, with ugly things written on mosques and Christian churches, Peter and I said, we've got to do something. Because we knew there were more people in this country per capita that have been exposed to spiral dynamics than any other country. So we thought we'd hold the first summit. We expected 40 or 50 people, Peter, and lo and behold, well over 200. We had changed venues. And here are some of the people who were there. Anyone here was there? Yes. See, that told us something was happening here. And we made a major effort, as you know, to redefine the issue out of religion into value system codes. Then even began to define a new Dutch motherboard, a new statement of Dutchness for the 21st century. And I think that project is well underway today in so many places after there has been an essential regression to a more right-wing, shut-the-door to immigration, throw them out, which is a natural kind of response. But now what's necessary from our perspective is a redefinition of Dutchness that allows for the integration of differences but demands accountability from blame to be blamed, from live and let live in gated communities to thrive and help thrive. And how do we do that? And the Dutch can be there first and teach the Germans, and French, many others who are going to have the same problem. Why you? Because you're used to the flow of the water. You know how to dam it up and dies, and you know how to release it. And that's exactly the same process about how you integrate cultural differences. It's embedded in your architecture, in your soul, about water. That's why you are the ones to lead us. So if anyone in the world is looking for the models of dealing with cultural pluralism beyond the polar, let them come to the Netherlands and see for themselves. All right, I'm just about finished because I want to talk to you about Israel-Palestine. From our South African experience, over those 63 trips, there are some people in Israel that thought maybe we could make a contribution. And so we went for the first time in February. And you can read this on Frank Visser's website now. And I want you to meet Elsa, who is from Lebanon. Now she lives in San Diego. She makes all the presentations in Arabic. She's on the way right now to Kuwait and Dubai to reproduce the Center for Human Emergence in the Middle East. We're going back in May. She is a very brave lady. There we were with the governor of Bethlehem and members of parliament. Of course, I'm from Texas, and you know that's not the best place to be from. And I've also learned that it's going to be women to transform the Middle East. I truly believe that. So, the Center for Human Emergence then is going to overlay the same concepts over that very difficult environment. When I first went to South Africa, of course I used to hear Yankee go home, and I said, hell, we've been saying that in Texas for years. But he just got dodged. But I knew when watching the AFRICOM, the transformation had already taken place. It just took time. I had the same feeling about Israel-Palestine. So that would be pretty unrealistic to say that once there was the Berlin Wall, and once there was apartheid. So, how do we stitch a world together? I found out 2 months ago that I am genetically Dutch. My mother is Dutch Holland. The years I've been coming, I didn't know that. I used to pick up tulip bulbs at Schiphol for when I was going through Johannesburg and KLM, but I had no idea. So I kind of teased Peter, you know, he's from UK, I said, Peter, I'm one of them. But I wear the tradition with great pride. Obviously, from the deepest part of my heart and soul, I wish you well. Please help us.